Broadcasting from InnieUpMagazine.com and 620 WDAE AM, the sports animal in Tampa Bay, Florida.
With your hosts, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's time to Ante Up. It's September 26th, and you're listening to the best poker podcast on the internet and all around the world, which I think the internet is around the world.
It is.
World Wide Web.
And, well, for right now it is. there's a possibility that the internet will not extend to the state of Kentucky pretty soon.
I love this story.
It'll be like, you know, a little tiny oasis from all the big bad stuff on the internet. Little old Kentucky there.
It's like Family Man when his house wasn't on the map, and so he was his own country, and they called it Petopia or something, right?
Yes, I remember that one.
Same kind of thing here, I think.
Yeah. That's hilarious. Yeah. Well, you know, at least they'll always have the horses and the fried chicken there.
And the mint julep.
And, yeah. I guess that's enough. You don't need internet poker there.
Well, you're like an alcoholic. Have you ever had mint julep?
I have had a mint julep. I get a mint julep once a year.
Is it good?
Yeah.
It looks really good because they always show that picture with the sweat on the side. And,
Although last year I didn't get one. We got to the derby party at Tampa Bay Downs too late.
Oh, man.
All the julep's are gone. All the women with the big hats drank them up. Try to settle for a overpriced Bud. But anyhow, so what we're all talking about here is Kentucky Governor Steve Beshear says he wants to take control of 141 domain names of online sites, gambling sites, including the big poker sites, FullTiltPoker.com, BodogLife.com, blah, 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 PokerStars.com. All of these, take control, give them to the state, because they're infringing on his Kentucky laws.
What?
Yeah, you know, and when I first saw it, I'm like, all right.
What is he thinking?
Thought somebody was off his rocker somewhere. Now, you know, in all fairness, I mean, to our friends that live in the state of Washington, we can't go too crazy here because they're actually locked down there. You know, it's a felony there. It's like, you know, they're killing kids or something if check raise on the big blind in a nickel dime game online. So this isn't that bad, but wow, talk about heavy handedness.
Sounds like someone's mother didn't love him, and he's looking for attention. I mean, you got to be kidding me.
And you know, and here's the thing. It'd be one thing. I still would not. I would still be just as livid if this guy was just an anti-gambling crusader who says this is destroying the world.
Yeah.
But his main reason is that it's siphoning money from Kentucky's gambling. And of course, he throws in a little bone about charitable gaming activities too. Of course, he starts off with the big thoroughbred racing industry and the lottery. But
oh man!
Wow!
Unbelievable.
Of course, you know, those are the kind of people that are running our laws in our country all over the place, too, trying to, same thing with the unlawful internet gambling enforcement and big carve-outs for horse racing and other of the established industries.
Yeah, it's okay to gamble on some things, just not other things.
Yes, exactly.
Unbelievable.
You're allowed to gamble on things that gave me money for my campaign, but for the rest of them, they're terrible.
That's right.
Destroying the children.
Don't do it. It's like crack.
So for all of our listeners out in Kentucky, well, we feel for you. That's some crazy stuff going on there.
I can just hear them all now getting together and singing My Old Kentucky Home.
And it is going to be an old home pretty soon if they have no internet there.
Yeah.
No tubes.
Yeah, no inner tubes.
Now, of course, this honorable governor's case is being made a little easier by the fact that the good folks at Ultimate Bet are embroiled in yet another cheating scandal.
Well,
$75 million claim filed against the software company that makes their software.
That's a massive claim. $75 million. That's just ridiculous.
That's almost half our net worth.
Almost half. What's the deal with this guy? What's the...
Well, you know, I can't get past it because it was an MSNBC story that broke, actually, just before we came to the studio last week. We didn't have really time to research it, so we didn't want to throw it out there. But, of course, the picture that MSNBC used in their breaking news story was Phil Hellmuth and his General Patton outfit coming to the World Series.
I'm sure they loved that.
Those women. So, yeah. It was funny then. But now it's not funny that the company being sued.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, a lot of the stuff started on the 2+2 forums. People started to make posting back in January, I believe, some, you know, stuff that just wasn't adding up. This is how this is all breaking now. And it's kind of interesting to me that people are still cheating online after all these scandals because people are watching now.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes no sense. And the same thing with, you know, everything. You know, like we just found out today that another teacher had sex with her student.
Yeah.
And it's like, hello? I mean, how many times Do people have to go to prison and be talked through a foot of glass for you to know that you shouldn't be touching the 14-year-olds? I mean, come on. Same thing, you know. How could you be cheating online poker when you know now they're just beefing up security and trying to stop it? It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. So who knows where it's going to go. You know, it's a lawsuit, and of course, they're suing people, Indians that run it in Canada, and so there's all kinds of worries about where your money's going to go, or whether everything's going to come of it anyhow. But
it's pretty sad that people would still attempt something like that with knowing what's out there. But then again, people still smoke cigarettes, and you know what I mean? So you just, when you're addicted to doing something, you're addicted. So.
I guess it's tough, yes. we know doing a poker podcast is bad for our health, but yeah, we still do it.
We still do it. We're glutton.
We still make the drive every week over here to WDAE and just yap about stuff yet another cheating scandal. But here are some people that do believe in online poker. The British London trading business.
This is really weird.
Manro Hayden is betting that he can make money from online poker by putting up the stakes for an army of more than 150 freelance, quote, traders to gamble over the internet.
This is pretty sick.
So, essentially they're looking at this as, hey, they have all these very complicated risk-reward ratios they come up with for dealing with their trading business anyhow, and they're right. Like, hey, wait a minute, we can apply that to online poker.
Well, remember when Karina Jett was in the studio and we talked to her about that, and she said she was getting interviewed for a documentary about poker players and stocks and how it all relates. And
exactly.
They were
exactly.
Hiring people to do stuff like that. So this is only just another arm of that. I mean, it's pretty similar, the fact that, cause risk-reward kind of thing. But really, to base your entire, not portfolio, but
it's kind of a very smart, very small part of their whole thing. But I think somebody was just saying, I think we can make this happen.
I mean, it's not like, hiring investment managers to take care of your 401k. You're going out and getting like these guys who are good at playing poker and putting your future in their hands. It's kind of scary.
Yeah, but I think it's a better deal for them. I mean, these guys are smart. This is kind of like the whole, let's go back to your favorite TV show, Tilt, in the Matador, getting his stable of horses. That's exactly what these guys are doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Cause, we figured out how you have to play. We just need some people that actually know poker. We'll give you how we are risk reward. Yeah. You go out and assume the risk, and then we take a cut of your profits.
Sure, it's just like variance. They say that, if you play long enough, the better players are going to win the money, and they have enough players to cover the variance. They're going to make money doing it. Just hopefully they can get it out.
So anyhow, they've set up a company called Bad Beat to recruit players and put up their money and imposing tight controls on their betting levels. And that's, of course, the big thing here. You don't want somebody going crazy on Tilt and having 8 Busch Lights and falling asleep during a tournament when they're, trying to make money for the trading house.
Is that what you were drinking, Busch Light, when you fell asleep?
No, actually, it was Busch Heavy. I made a mistake. I made a fatal error at the Quickie Mart.
Well, when you drink a heavy beer,
so I had to get rid of it.
Sleepy.
Yeah.
Just like turkey and tryptophan.
Exactly. But, I was trying to get rid of it because, the wife was upset that I did not get the light beer. So I was trying to rectify my mistake, and in doing so caused yet another one. But apparently, Daniel Negreanu fell asleep, too.
Oh, really?
During a tournament. So, I'm not the only one.
It's funny, though. It's one guy who didn't fall asleep. It was a guy who broke the Guinness Book of World Records for playing straight through. I can't believe this guy actually did it.
I tell you, though, but look at this picture here we have of this guy.
Yeah.
And he looks like he's been up playing heads-up poker for more than 100 hours.
And, he used to have brown hair. Now it's all white and gray.
Well, that's probably just because I printed it out in the black and white.
Yeah, because, I've seen the photo.
Color toner is expensive for
a
startup company.
Oh, man. But, we were talking about this before, of course, and we said how we didn't think that it really was a record. But according to Guinness, it's a record, so pretty remarkable.
Now, I read through this whole story once or twice, and I have not seen Andy Beal's name in here. So I wonder if we could set up a U.S. versus Great Britain challenge match here.
That'd be pretty cool.
Because that Beal guy's got game.
Wait, one of my favorite lines from the story, though, is the guy, said he saw when he was starting to hallucinate, he was seeing, like crawly spiders on the table and stuff or something. That was really cool. That, who needs drugs, man? Just play poker for 72 hours.
Exactly. If you're seeing spiders crawling on the table, how can you make out the difference between the... how many times have we been at a poker table and some idiot is like, I've got a flush, and they don't because it's three clubs on the board and not the three spades, and that guy's only been playing for 2 hours.
It reminds me when Faso was hallucinating after playing for 2 days straight, and he thought he had a full house or something, and he did, and then they pushed him out the door, and... because he was just hallucinating. And the guy was having a DTs at the table, and he wasn't addicted to anything. That's pretty sick. But he set the record, so congratulations.
Another
American record goes down. We got to get Michael Phelps to try to beat that record.
Yeah, there we go.
Poker underwater.
Feed him a lot of hamburgers and stuff to keep his stamina up.
20,000 calories a day. He had 60,000 calories 3 days. Did it say on there how long he actually played for? Because I remember the record
was 100
like,
hours, yes.
It was 100. The original record was like 70 hours and 2 minutes.
72 hours and 2 minutes.
2 minutes. I love that 2 minutes.
Yeah.
It's like, I made 72 hours. Let me try to play. Oh, I'm in his hand. I might win his hand. So that's why it's 2 minutes.
Well, exactly. You know, it's kind of like, you know, playing late at night, you know, a tournament. And you're like, I can make it. I can make it to the end. As soon as you get to the end, boom, you're gone. So that's probably what we did. He got to the 72 hours and was like, I made it. And then just kind of like suffered through the last 2 minutes. And
yeah, well, I think he got to 72 minutes. He looked down pocket aces and he had to play the hand out. That's what I'm saying. So he had to play two more minutes once he got to 72 hours.
Oh,
then he
ranked
in a big pot and fell and collapsed. That's probably what happened. But this other guy made 100 hours. My God, that's just sick. Well, congratulations.
Yes, absolutely.
So we've been talking to a lot of our friends locally, including Sam Minatello down at One Eye Jacks, who is hosting his Pros versus Joes. Notice how I got it right this time? Instead
of
Joes versus Pros. A horse tournament this week, and it's tomorrow. It starts tomorrow at 1 o'clock. And so we're talking to him and a couple of our other friends and one of our writers, too, John Lanier, local guy, local friend, fan of the show. He's going to play in it. And so people were asking us, you know, what do you think for strategy for this? What do you think? And so we've been mulling it over. And we've come up with some stuff for a horse tournament, especially this horse tournament. And hopefully people will show up tomorrow and play in it.
Actually, it's today.
Well,
we're
taping a day early, but it's Friday.
Yeah, exactly.
Tournament's Friday.
I mean, you can show up Saturday, but, you know.
I may put the show up early today.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Thursday.
Just to mask this error.
Yeah, just to cover this error up.
So you don't have to use it as an Easter egg?
Yeah.
All right, very good.
But it's still Friday and Saturday. I think, is it 2 days?
Yes, 2 days.
Yeah, it's 2 day tournament. So,
and Dewey Tomko.
Dewey Tomko is going to be there from the Winter Haven area in Florida.
It has not been confirmed yet whether he's wearing a turtleneck.
Or earplugs.
But I'm laying odds at 2-1 that he will.
Dewey's won a few bracelets, and he also finished second in the main event twice. We're hoping to talk to him tomorrow and interview him, or Friday, today, depending on when you listen to this.
And clearly, he knows how to play horse. Horse games.
Yeah, absolutely.
But John Lanier, our nothing but net columnist, is a pretty smart player.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He's done very well.
He's very successful.
He's gone to a lot of these WSOP academies and WPT boot camps, and he's been on the show, and so he knows the stuff.
Yep.
And he's applying all that to figuring out his horse strategy.
Yep.
And I like that. I mean, here's a player that, you know, hey, there's a big tournament coming up. I'm going to plot my strategy. I'm just not going to go in there and play my normal game.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he's thinking that the Raz will be the butter for him.
And I have to agree there. I think even we talked to Sam, and Sam said the same thing. He thinks that was what people were most afraid of down in his room, and that's what they're not prepared to play properly or correctly or whatever. So,
all right, but and here's my cautionary tale that I gave John is that yes, I do agree that people will not know how to play Raz, but I do not think that means that they will clam up and not play.
Oh right, no,
I think they will be playing and they will not be playing optimally, which
right.
is great,
which is what you want.
But that means you can't use that kind of second level kind of Raz strategy that you might use against players who actually know what they're doing,
right?
Because these players, as John wrote back, said, "Hey, that's true. They don't know that they're playing bad,
right.
So it doesn't mean that they're going to fall for these kind of moves." So that was my first cautionary tale for him too. But
yeah.
You know, he also said something that I had tried early on in my horse career was to kind of lay low during the Hold'em and Omaha rotations and thinking that people were going to be more aggressive there and then make your money in
right.
the last three.
Right.
And what I found, and I think some other people have found too, is you just don't get as many hands in the three stud rotations as you do in the two Hold'em rotations.
That is true.
And if you get card dead, you're in trouble. So I think you need to get in and mix it up in those other rounds.
I wouldn't be sticking to top 10 hands. But I don't know if I would mix it up either, though. You know what I mean? I still think that you're going to be able to capitalize when it does get to those three rounds, because a lot of people aren't going to understand how to play stud eight and Raz, and even stud for that matter. So I don't know. I don't think I necessarily agree about mixing it up.
But those three games, I think you need cards more than you do in the other ones.
Well, it's still limits, Scott. It's not no limit. I still think you need cards in Hold'em.
Exactly, but it's slower. You're getting fewer hands, and I think it's going to be harder to outplay those people with poorer cards in the stud rotations. is what I'm saying. Mm. I think a good player in Hold'em, even though people are going to be aggressive in there, I think they're going to be lowering their starting hand requirements. And if you're playing position and aggressive in position in those hands, then you should be able to. You shouldn't just sit back and relax those two rounds.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't think you should just be not playing them for the sake of not playing them, but I still think you need to be selective. Starting hands is still very important, especially in a tournament like this when people don't understand, you know, that it's going to be changing. You're going to be putting in an ante pretty soon, you know what I mean? So, you know, the other thing, too, he asked about was he talked about stud eight and said, you know, I'm going to be playing, you know, I'm going to be playing the high hand only. And I was like, whoa, calm down there, buddy. Let's talk about this for a minute. And he had a great strategy all planned out up till that point. He said that he felt like people weren't really going to understand that a low doesn't always get there, so he played just the high hands. And I said, no, that's a real bad strategy for stud eight. He talked about he was reading up on all these things and he wants to become Chip Reese, you know. And I said, well, the irony there is that Chip Reese was the one who gave out the great tip about stud eight, that if you really don't know how to play stud eight, focus only on the low. Not to say that you wouldn't play rolled ups or, you know, or you know, pocket aces or split aces or whatever. So, you know, stud eight is a big thing, because just like that, he'd been doing all this reading and he was thinking he was going to go high only in stud eight, and that was clearly a mistake. So I think people are going to not know how to play this game as well. Always go for the low, and then unless you have a really high hand and or a hand that you think you can, you know, play somebody with, but always go for the low and hope to back into a high hand.
You know, oh, yeah, true. I mean, how many big pots do you rake in horse? They always come in stud eight when you
always
scoop.
Yep, always in stud eight when you scoop. So
when you scoop, too. Now, obviously, if it's a high hand and no one gets a low, you're going to scoop. But
Yeah.
But my guess is there's going to be multiple people playing in these hands and stud eights, and it's going to be very rare that there's not going to be a low out there.
So. Yeah. So anyway, it should be a fun weekend, and looking forward to it. I'm going to be down there and covering it. So you're listening to this early in the morning, and you want to get down there, go down and play. And if you want to just rail John or Dewey Tomko, head down there too. Sarasota Kennel Club, One Eye Jacks, one of the finest rooms in the state.
All right, Chris. So we hear about we love to share new games on the show.
Yeah. And 2-1-1, which we introduced into the home game.
2-11, please. Get the name right.
I like 2-1-1. Yeah.
Those of us that were in on the ground floor, the 2-11 Revolution.
You loved it, too. You loved it.
It's an awesome game. It really is. You know, I'm not chilling for this guy. I dealt out some practice hands and really liked it. We got in the home game and started playing.
I can never find a hand to play.
Exactly. And I think it was because you were being too tight and just not seeing the field properly.
Oh, I do know that every hand that I folded would not have won. I folded correctly. But
I don't doubt that.
But yeah, so now we got another game here, which I know we're not going to introduce into the home game.
No, this is not not so much for our the hardened core poker players, but it's called 21 to the River, right?
Yep.
It's being played exclusively at the Hard Rock Casino in Las Vegas. Now, the Hard Rock in Vegas, too, they just opened that new poker room there.
New room.
Supposed to be pretty swanky.
Swanky.
And they've got a couple other weird games going there. I think we might have mentioned it before, like the Royal Hold'em and No River Hold'em.
Yep.
Those are also being played there as well, too. So I'm kind of wondering if it's kind of like a carnival poker atmosphere there. You walk in and can I play 1-2 Noma? And they're like, huh?
What is that?
What is that?
You want Follow the Queen? You got that. Want to play Anaconda? Sure.
No, and I certainly don't. I'm not picking on the Hard Rock. I'd love to walk into a casino and have these rare games that people have not played yet because, you know, when I'm sitting at home dealing out hands, I'm getting ahead of these folks.
Yeah,
I'm going to cash in before they all figure out how to win 21 to the River.
Always got to find the edge.
All right, so here's 21 to the River, according to the publicist that let us know. It is simple to understand, which is always good. That's what we like in a poker game. We don't like to be very confused.
Yeah.
That's why
I'm still confused by it, even though I've read the rules already. So
that's why we've never done a show on triple draw here, because we like to stick to the easy games.
Yeah.
All right, so players make a mandatory blackjack bet and a bet on the poker hand.
Right.
If the player chooses not to bet on the poker hand, then they got to quit listening to the show, because this is not a blackjack pot. But if they choose not to bet on the poker hand, then the player can only play blackjack.
Yep.
The player plays his blackjack hand in normal fashion, including hitting, standing, doubling, and splitting under normal house rules. Games are played with one standard deck of 52 cards with up to 5 players.
Which is kind of cool for, like, you know...
Yeah, you could count.
Card counters, yeah. That's what I'm saying, so...
Exactly. You could be, you know, like those people in the movie that are much more glamorous than the MIT count team. But poker starts as the player busts his blackjack hand. The card that busted the player at the blackjack is used as the first card for the poker hand.
I just don't get it. What I don't get it.
Well, then you're down four more additional cards. You get a five-card poker hand.
But I don't understand. Like, there's other people playing poker and blackjack at the table, too. So the first person who's dealt blackjack, if his hand busts, that starts the poker hand, and the rest of people can't play blackjack on their hands?
No. When their hand is dealt out, then it goes to the next people when they do their blackjack hand. In fact, actually, there used to be a variation that the wife and I used to play called... Actually, it was called Three-Way when we first played it at the Vegas Club and Lady Luck out in Vegas. Then when I tried to find it after I got home, when you type Three-Way into the little Google box, you get stuff that's...
So now the game's called Ménage à Trois.
No. Now I've seen it. When I've seen it, it's been called Triple Shot, and I think it's still being dealt at Harrah's in Las Vegas, the last place I saw when I was out there for the World Series. Hmm. But they combine, it's actually war to start with.
Oh, yeah.
And then your war cards become your blackjack cards, and then your blackjack cards become your poker cards. And if at any point you need additional cards, they deal them out.
Yeah, we're getting too far away from this story here. Let's focus
but
on
no,
it.
But no, that was a fun game. And I think this is just kind of a smaller version of that. They skip the whole war part and you play blackjack
and if you
blackjack and
only play the blackjack hand, the poker bet is a push. Is that right?
It's true. If you do not bust in your blackjack hand. So it's really also, a game for blackjack more than poker.
It's also available in a six-deck shoe for six players. So I would rather play the other one.
That's of course, you want to play the single deck.
Yeah. And so if you want to go to their website, AlTableDreams LLC. So it's all Al Tables. It's like AlTableDreamsLLC.com is I don't know what kind of name that is, but anyway, if you go to that site, you can learn more about this this game. So that is why couldn't you just have like you know?
Well, it's really a corporate website. They're pretty soon they're probably going to come out with a 21river.com or something like that. It takes time.
God, that is just
not like you can just go to GoDaddy and register a domain name.
That's true. You know, so it's already a week old, but we have to talk about it.
Apes. Yes, we do have to talk about
it. We have to talk
apes.
About these apes.
First, let's give props to Theron 74.
Yes, give props to him. He's been on a roll. He's looking to hunt down that Player of the Year award. He's creeping up. So, nice job for winning the banana. And I'm still working on the design of the banana. So, just hang tough.
I'm beginning to think people don't believe you, including me. Bananas, I think, they've been on the shelf a long time. Even though they're made of plastic, they probably are going to be pretty squishy by the time we get these out to people.
Yeah. All right. Well, and brown, too.
Well, brown's not so bad. It's the squishiness.
Well, you know what, though?
You don't want a limp banana.
If I get an envelope and I open it up and it's this brown, squishy, soft, cylindrical thing in it, I'm not thinking it's a banana. And I'm hoping that it's plastic. Hey, you know what, though? Theron called us, so let's listen to what he had to say.
Hi, Scott and Chris. This is Theron 74 from Houston, Texas. Just won the Apes event number 9, short-handed no limit hold'em. Enjoyed the tournament, played a lot of small ball, won a lot of pots without showdown. Got it in a couple of times bad, but I was a big stack at the time, so you can afford it. Anyway, I was just happy to play the tournament, as in Houston, I gave us all a pretty bad beat. Anyway, keep up the good work, enjoy the show, and Zerka Boyd, I'm hopefully caning on you. All right, take care, guys.
Well, we're glad you're excited. We're glad you're inching up in the Player of the Year award. Nice job taking down a banana, you know. Yeah. And I before the tournament, you and I were talking, and I said, you know, I got a lot of work to do. I'm either going to double up early or I'm going to go home because I got stuff to do, you know. So
and you went home early.
I went home early. I was second one out.
Yes.
And
you're at my table too, and I'm kind of upset about that because I never get a chance to get to get that bounty.
Well, I was I played it perfectly. I knew exactly.
Wait a minute.
I knew I was ahead.
All right.
I didn't know I was ahead. I did that knowing I was behind. Right.
I'll let you hang yourself. Keep going.
I call with ace jack. Flop came jack high. I check with the intent of check raising. Guy made a bet. Check raised them all in. He called with queen jack. I had ace jack. Turn was a blank. River? Yeah. Three outer and I'm gone.
All right, so all due respect to your Jamie Gold impression here, top is not the nuts. And while you were sure you were ahead, and I have no doubt that you were sure.
I was positive.
It seems not optimal to me and probably 98% of the poker playing audience out there to move all in on the second hand. With top.
Did I know that he would call?
With top.
Did I know that he was with in top, love top. With his... That's right, Scott. Yeah. I had the best hand.
But 100%. You're too vulnerable then.
Vulnerable to a three-outer?
Yes.
Yeah, three outs vulnerable. Yeah, okay. I will take three odds every day of the week and twice on Sunday.
But there's no way you could have known that you had him dominated there.
When I check raised, his bet was weak. I knew he would, if he was in love with his hand, he was going to call. So one way or the other, I was going to double up or call.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying.
And I double, I should have doubled
home,
up.
And, you know, mission accomplished.
I did. I said, it's either going to do that or that, and I achieved what I was going to do. But you know what, though? I mean, it was six-handed. Six-handed, his hand's values come way down.
That's true.
And it came jack, rag, so he could have had pocket tens. He could have had ace-king, which is what I was positive he had, like ace-king or ace-queen. And it was a continuation bet, and my check was going to trap him. And I thought when I shoved, he's no way he's going to call unless he's got a better hand. And he didn't have a better hand. He still called. Made a huge mistake. Should have been gone, and he was gone shortly after that anyway. So I did what I had to do, and I went home. Know what? I saved time, did a lot of work, and what'd you do? You played for what, another hour and still didn't make a dime. And when I was done with my work, I backed down to the table and I played for cash and I made my buy-in and then some with some other players that were in the tournament who got busted too.
Yeah, with probably better hands than top, but that's all right. But our good friend Faso did cash.
Yes, he did.
So let's give him prompts.
Nice job.
And I will say this about your strategy. Our new Hand of the Week sponsor, who we will bring up towards the end of the show, been reading his book, and he says embrace the risk in poker. That's how you make a difference. You embrace the risk.
Well, it didn't work out for you, but you embrace the risk. When we play apes, either I'm going to go big or I'm going to go home. That's the way it goes. It's a $5 tournament, and I need to get some chips to play the way I want to play. And if I don't, then I go home. And it's fine. You know what? We're playing with the listeners. We're having fun. And you guys have all this fodder to make fun of me now. And hey, that's the way it goes. You know, put a few hands. You know what?
That's the way the top crumbles.
You know, like an hour, 2 hours later, I go back, start playing a little bit of cash games, and one of our listeners sits down with us. I make a raise, and he re-raises. And I type in, do you really like your hand that much, man, to raise me? You know? And he doesn't say anything. So then I shove, and of course he calls with queens, and I have pocket aces. The flop comes 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And, you know, flop in the board, the whole board.
Yeah.
So and it was saying that both of us end up losing money. But again, here it is. I trap another apes player. Trap him for all of his money, going to double my bankroll right there. And instead, we end up both losing money. I hate that about, you know what? I'm going to start a campaign. Split pots, no rake.
That's a good campaign. I might get behind that.
Split pots, no rake. You don't deserve money if we don't get money. Split pots,
no, but, you know, no rake. They're dealing a service. It's like, you know, they brought you that bottle of water. You know, it doesn't matter whether you drank it or not. You know, you got to pay for that service. So I don't know if I can get behind that, but
split pots, no rake.
But you know, I think the campaign you probably should get on is introducing no river hold'em if you can't handle the river.
No, it wasn't even the river, really.
It was the river in both cases in these two hands, and that's what you're railing about. It's four cards. There is no river, so you can't blame the river anymore.
Well, I mean, you know, a straight on board when I have an 80% chance of winning, and then a three-outer at the end, I still have like 90% chance to win. All right. Well, you know what? I heard the hotline twice during our show today, and we didn't answer it. So let's answer it now.
Hey, Chris and Scott. This is Eric, a.k.a. Cynicalite in the forums. I started listening to the podcast near the end of February and finally got up to date listening to 3 years' worth of podcasts in a little over 6 months. Anyway, after the show, there's nothing for me to listen to. I tried listening to other poker podcasts, and I'm finding myself frustrated with crappy interviews of people I could care less about. Maybe those other shows are an acquired taste. I need to put on my caviar pajamas to fully enjoy the softball questions and ego stroking of the stars that they interview. But anyway, since you guys probably have oodles of time on your hand, you may want to think about making that daily podcast a reality, or set up the digital recorder at your home game and post an unedited 6-hour recording, kind of like the Kenna James Boudicca thing. It'll help me get my fix. Seriously, I'm dying here. Thanks.
So there you have it. You know, we're still the best, at least in one person's eyes. we are the best. He said, you know, he's listened to all of our shows all 3 years. Now he's jonesing for more, and we can only come out once a week. He wants us to do the daily thing, but we don't have the time.
It's still a dream.
It's a dream.
We are still reaching for that dream. So
you know, when you and I become publishers at large,
yes, that's
and
true.
Someone else is running
or
emeritus.
The company. Emeritize.
Yeah, emeritize. Then you know, you and I could just come down here every day and do a show. But Right now, we just, there's no way we could do a daily show. But you know what, though? His words say it best, that the other shows just don't hold muster. So I want to use this opportunity to say, please, please go on anyupmagazine.com, click on the link that takes you to Bluff Magazine, and we'll let you vote for us as the best poker podcast, Reader's Choice Award. 2 years running, man. We want to defend the title.
Absolutely. And then we just have a few days left in the nominations for the podcastawards.com podcast awards.
That's on there, too.
Podcast awards. Podcastawards.com, podcast awards.
Well, you don't even need to tell the website, because it's on our website.
That's true.
AnyUpMagazine.com. We need the hits.
But you need to check out
our site.
But you need to get those nominations in before the end of the month, so do not delay.
Did you nominate us?
Of course I did.
I did, too.
They've nominated us in the home and garden section. So we're probably going to have Martha Stewart on the show at some point, too.
I have a green thumb. And while you're on the website, take a look at the subscriptions for our magazine, too. You know, for a mere $25, you can support the Antiup Nation. Think of it as 50 cents a show. Really. I mean, is the podcast, is your hour of enjoyment worth 50 cents a week? Sounds like, you know, one of those children's Christian fund.
You just forced our listeners into deciding between supporting our magazine or feeding a kid for a year.
For the price of a cup of coffee, you could keep the Antiup Nation, a third world country. And right when I said that, my stomach growled. So I think I could use the 50 cents a week, you know.
Yeah, probably.
So anyway, go to our website, vote for us on Bluff. We really want to win that award again. We really want to stick it to the man. Well, by the man, I mean Phil Gordon and Gavin Smith. Also, nominate us and subscribe to us, man. It's not really begging. It's more like a just suggestion, I think.
Before we move on to the 1 minute mystery, let's let our lucky hotline winner know.
If you send us your information, the kind folks at DB Dealer will send you a deck of their fiery plastic playing cards.
They are fiery. They're almost scary.
I love them. They got flames on them. They're durable. They're better than you know, just regular old cards. And plus, you know, you got them for being immortalized on our show. So send us your address information, and we'll ship you off a deck of those cards.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another 1 minute mystery, the case of the lost cause.
I need to talk about this.
We are one level up from last week's hand, and to remind you, it's late in a multi-table tournament. We tripled up and now have an average stack of 17K. Blinds are 150, 300, Annie's 50. Three folds and the hijack seat goes all in for 4K. Cutoff folds behind, button calls the 4K and has another 1500 behind. Small blind folds. In the big blind, I look down at ace of diamonds, jack of spades.
Yeah, I'm gonna need a couple minutes here, sir.
So there's 8K in the pot and it's 4K to call. Simple decision?
All right, the case of the lost cause. Now, you know, it's a continuation of the tournament from last week. You know, we just tripled up, we got some money, and the hijack seat goes all in for 4K, and the button calls, and we just have ace-jack. That button scares me.
Well, you know,
and why is he just calling?
It takes a lot for you to get scared with ace-jack.
I know.
That's a all-my-children hand for
I
you.
I was not scared. I was not scared, Napes.
But, you know, I'm going to reserve my comments here because I have demonstrated 2 weeks ago that I have a little bit of an earwax problem when it comes to the 1 minute mystery. And I would rather not embarrass myself on this segment of the show. I'll save my embarrassment for
future shows.
Yes, other segments.
Other segments of the show, which we're looking forward to. So let's move on to that right now.
Want Rays news from real Rays fans? OutsPerSwing.com. OutsPerSwing.com has interviews, analysis, and all the breaking news for your Tampa Bay Rays. Are you looking for up-to-date news on the most exciting team in baseball? Check out OutsPerSwing.com. That's OutsPerSwing.com.
Scott, as you notice, I am sitting a little askew today.
Yes.
Because my wallet is now fat. And I noticed that you are standing in the studio today because for you were to sit down, it would be a long fall from the pedestal that you were on last week. Ooh, look how fat my wallet is. Look how crooked I'm sitting. I want so much money.
Something
happened this week that we have to talk about.
Well, actually, it's been happening for a for quite a while. Last week's home game was an aberration. My success there.
It was the exception that proved the rule.
Exactly.
Is that what
exactly.
You're saying?
Okay. Absolutely. And here's the thing: I have been running bad. I have been running really bad.
That's a shame.
Yeah, it is. Now, when I say really bad, it's not like I've ran up the corporate credit card and we're going to get a big bill from Ultimate Bet here pretty soon. What I mean is I have not had much success. I've been playing a lot of sit and goes, which I used to crush, and I have not cashed in very many of them. Actually, any of them.
Really?
Until last night. Actually, I won one last night, so I'm breaking through, I think. But I still feel the lingering effects of this running bad hangover. And, you know, we get these kind of letters often here at Antiup headquarters. People are like, you know, hey, what do you do when you're running bad? And, you know, I think we try to give them as much advice as we can. But, you know, I thought this week, I'm going to humble myself. I'm going to lay down here on the Antiup psychiatric couch here. And you could put on your little glasses and the white Freud beard here and see if we can... use me as a voodoo doll here.
Okay, well,
to figure out some help for other of our listeners who may be running bad.
Let's start with a little word association. I'm going to say a word. You're going to say the first thing that pops into your mind.
You like doing this with a lot of people.
And then I will... No. The other people, I just say, what do they think of these people?
Okay.
But I'm going to say a word now, and you tell me the first thing that pops into your mind, and then we'll analyze it. And that may get to the root of why you suck.
All right. You're digging deep into my id.
Okay. Raise.
Donuts.
Fold.
Donuts.
Okay, let's move on to the ink blot portion of the show. What do you think of when you look at this?
My wallet.
Supposed to say donuts.
Okay, sorry.
Really,
I was channeling Homer Simpson.
There. Obviously, I have no idea what I'm doing over here. So, no, but really, what seems to be the problem here? Why is it that you think you're running bad? Are you impatient?
If I knew, I would have this fixed, and I would be paying you $300 an hour to therapize me.
This is what therapists do. They get you to talk about why you think you usually end up solving your own problems. We're geniuses. We make all this money.
All right. Well, here, one thing I know is I have been, I'm by nature a passive player, which is not good. And I think I've been playing more passively than usual. I've been risk adverse. Now, I don't know whether that was at the beginning of this bad run or whether that's just a symptom of trying to treat it, because that's what usually happens. You either probably go one of two routes. Either you start tightening up even more because you're afraid of losing more, or you just go, you know, bell tower crazy and go hyper aggressive. And that hasn't been my case, I don't think. But I think I have been playing much more passively. And I've started opening it up a little bit later, and I think maybe that's what helped me break through last night. But
well, let me ask you, are you talking about strictly tournaments it goes? Or are you talking?
Yeah, that's pretty much all I play
online.
You're
not talking about the cash games.
No, the only cash games I played are in the home game, and obviously I crushed that 2 weeks ago and then got crushed last week.
I don't understand,
though.
So
money even there, but I am certainly a...
I don't understand, though. Why is it that you're only playing sit and goes online and maybe that is the symptom that...
That could be. That's a good point. I think mostly it's been because, you know, we've been busy with a new business, and I don't play as much as I used to. So, you know, when I get online, I just kind of want to... I'm playing for fun, I guess. So I guess that's not a bad thing that I'm running bad. I'm still enjoying it, and I'm playing for fun, and I enjoy the sit-and-goes more than I do cash games. So that's probably why I'm playing the sit-and-goes more.
I do have to wonder, though, if playing for fun is what's hurting you, too.
You know,
if you have that killer instinct, you might be doing something differently than if you were just like, you know, I'm just playing for fun and I'm passive and I'm going to fold this hand or I'm not going to re-raise. It may be the symptoms here that are leading to you not either maximizing your wins or playing to your potential. It just seems to me that if you're separating the two, only playing cash games when we have a home game, which is once or twice a month at best, and then only playing sit and goes online, you know, and plus, you know, it's you're subject to, you know, the quickly escalating blinds online. You know, you get yourself into situations where when you play on live tournaments like at Tampa Bay Downs, you do well. You may not be cashing all the time, but you're surviving, doing well, thriving, making final tables. But online, you're not. Maybe you should stop playing sit and goes and focus on, you know, we always give that advice to people too when we're on the show saying, hey, what are you doing when you run bad? We always tell them, play a different game. Maybe you should play a different, and I don't really call, I don't know if it's, you know, not, you wouldn't say a different game, so just play cash games online for a little while, or, you know, start taking it more seriously and not make it just for entertainment.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. But here, I guess this is my thinking on sit and goes, is your risk is, your financial risk is limited in sit and goes.
Uh-huh.
You know, if I play a, you know, a sit and go, I'm probably going to get an hour's worth of entertainment. I don't play no limit hold'em sit and goes. I play various different ones. Versus, let's say like, I just play a $5 plus 50 cent. If I go into a cash game, you know, I could lose a lot more. You can win a lot more, obviously, but the variance, I think, the immediate variance is much higher in cash games.
Well,
over the course of the run,
if you're not playing no limit hold'em, I still think that for $5, you can sit down at a cash game, you know, 25-cent, 50-cent one, just to relax, and it would last an hour, and you would probably make more money that way.
Mm.
You know, if you're playing stud eight or hold'em or Omaha, but limit, your $5 will last easily. Play horse online that way, even if you play for $10 table, you know. You're not going to lose $10. You're just not. And especially at the level that they play at and the level that you play at. You know, if you do, like I said, if you're just looking to relax and mix it up a little bit, change it up a little bit, and be entertained for an hour, I would sit down at a low-stakes cash game and just relax and enjoy it. You know what? It just seems to me that if you're having a lot of trouble in sit and goes, although you do seem to think you've broken through now, it just feels like if that's the only thing you're doing on there, you're limiting yourself, and you're not. There's no other way to change it up other than to just totally throw everything out the window and start over with a whole new, you know, approach. And I feel like that it's something that you're not, you know, you got to have that, you know, that killer instinct, and you don't seem to be having that. You admitted that you're playing passively, and now you're worried about, you know, we have a company now, we're on our own, you don't want to be spending too much money. So maybe you should, you know, just mix it up a little bit and do something different online, you know, because we don't play sit and goes anymore in any of our home games.
So, yeah, we don't. Yeah.
It's not like you can do it there. You can go to a, yeah, the other thing, too, is if you do it at a brick and mortar, it's going to cost you a lot more money to do one of those. So, I don't know. It just seems to me that, you know, you admitted your problem. It's the passivity, and that could be the reason why you're not winning, you know, or not getting over the hump.
Now, I tell you, one of the things that I've told other people in the past to do is, and it's a common strategy, I think, from all people, is to drop down in levels. And so I've actually gone down to play these $1 and $2 tournaments, again, just for fun.
Yeah.
And maybe I think that's what's been contributing to it, is that I haven't been able to cash in those. Again, like I said, I won one last night and played very well and got some confidence back. But talk about a, you know, a real downer is when you drop down to levels way below what you normally play and you can't win in those too.
Yeah, but that's just a victim of it's not a lot of money to other people, so they're not playing optimally either. That you can't really relate
yeah,
it to
okay,
that.
But what level do people play optimally? I think this is kind of a fallacy.
No, I don't think it is.
I think in general you find rich folks who will play at the high levels that are no better than people playing at the quarter 50 cent level. Obviously, there's a lot more beginners at the smaller tables than there are others. But again, money's all relative to the people that you're playing against, and you're playing online, so you can't see the other people. You can't make any kind of judgments about them.
Well,
let's
look at it this way. If you have the internet and you have a computer, you have some money in your house. You know what I mean? You're not playing at the library. Obviously, a dollar, I don't care who you are, if you're playing online poker, a dollar does not mean so much to you that you're sweating it out.
Okay, now I'm going to argue with you this a little bit. I mean, it's become a little easier to get money back into these sites, but for a long time, it was pretty darn hard to get money in these sites.
As long as you can get money in, you can get money in. So if you have money online, you have money.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. But if you only have, let's say you only have, you've been running bad and you're down to $25 online.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, that $25, you treat that like it's the last 25 bucks you're going to have in life. So it doesn't matter whether you're playing a dollar or
sit
and go.
Every dollar player that you're coming up against in that scenario.
No, what I'm saying, though, is you can't make those kind of judgments, I think, and have them prove up as completely accurate.
Or one case or two cases, but generally, if you're playing in a 90-player sit-and-go for a dollar, I would say that 75% of those people, easy, don't give a shit about that dollar.
And you're one of the 15 that do, obviously. We drive down the street and you see a penny and we got to pull over and grab it.
Well, I'm different. No, but really, I still think that you're just afraid to... You've gotten to the point now where it's in your head and you're afraid to lose, and so you're playing passively. You're not playing your optimally. And when you won last night, how did you play?
I did play a lot more aggressively.
You were aggressive. That's your whole thing. And you know what? When you're kicking our butts in the home game, it's when you're aggressive. Because you're not getting great cards all the time. You're just being aggressive.
Usually I am,
you know you're not. We see you turn over fours at the end because you knew we don't have anything and we're just trying to hit the overs. And you're betting aggressively and you're making us pay for it. You turn over a little lowly pair of sevens and you win. You know, I mean, I think your aggression is your key. And it seems like you knew your problem all along coming in. The passivity and the fact that you've got all of that, we got all this stuff hanging over our heads now, probably contributed to that. You think you need to be more aggressive. And it's a good way to break out, doing something opposite of what you normally do. Same with when we always say, if you're sucking at Hold'em, go play Omaha for a little while. Then come back to Hold'em and it focuses you. Same thing with this. If you're playing too passive, mix it up, because you're not doing well playing passive, so why not try it aggressively, you know? And if that doesn't work, then quit the game.
Pick up cricket or something.
Yeah, we'll start a cricket magazine.
Well, I think you're on to something, Chris, and I think it's something inherent in that we'll talk about during the hand of the week with
cool.
Our new sponsor.
All right, let's do that now. Do you get enough? Poker, that is. Get in more playing time by buying her a gift card from Red Bamboo MediSpa in Northwood Plaza, Clearwater. Call 727-726-6100 or visit redbamboomedispa.com. The winning cards are gift cards from Red Bamboo MediSpa.
This is Lee Childs, 2007 main event, 7th place finisher, and you are listening to Annie Up.
Today's Hand of the Week brought to you by Tournament Poker, 101 Winning Moves, Expert Plays for No Limit Tournaments. Chris, it's a new book by Annie Up National, Mitchell Kogert,
yep.
Who also wrote a very good Raz book as well, too. And this book you can pick up for the low, low price of $19.95 on Amazon.com and wherever else you buy books. And, by the way, Chris, he's also extending a free offer specifically for Annie Up listeners. If you go to www.apokerexpert.com/anteup.html, and we'll put that link on our forum at anteupmagazine.com forum, you can download 20 of the 101 winning moves for turn to play.
And I like Mitchell's style. Anytime somebody asks me about Raz, I always recommend his book. And as a matter of fact, it happened twice this week. Someone asked me what I thought of Raz and what I thought of that book, and I highly recommended it because... not only is it an easy read, but the like I said, he's got the formula in there, and so he's I think he's got the right approach for writing, and the formula in that book is really something you can hold on to if you want to be a successful Raz player. So it's the same thing with this book.
And again, I said in this book, he points out the fact that you have to embrace the risk in poker.
Yep,
that tip there alone is probably worth the cost.
Yep.
All right, so here's our hand of the week this week. It's coming from Jeremy. You remember the little girl who used to say baton like you?
Yeah.
It's the same guy. He's writing in. He's got a hand of the week now.
That's cool.
Sadly, the little girl no longer says it that way. She's progressed to speaking normally.
So then clearly she's not my child.
Yeah, wow.
Now I'm sad.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we were pretty clear on that to begin with. But anyhow, Jeremy sends us in a hand from a $100 buy-in church charity tournament.
Oh, cool.
So God is on his side. probably on everybody's side.
I think he's on everybody's side. That's the problem.
So neutralizes the whole effect of
God's
that.
Like, go all in.
No, but, you know, God probably knows who put more in the collection plate that morning.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Karma?
And we don't have that information here, so. And I don't believe our good friend Mitchell addresses that in his 101 tournament.
No, that's not fair.
Ooh, so.
If you put a dollar in the collection plate, fold.
All right, he says he started with a staggering 1,000 chips.
Oof.
Pretty normal for charity tournaments. It's a third level in. Blinds are 20-40. He is the chip leader with 2,900 in chips. Wow, can you imagine that? You're two levels in,
wow,
and the chip leader is only tripled up.
Yeah.
All right. Middle position player opens to 120. It's folded to our hero, and he looks down at queen. Generally a pretty good hand.
Do we know the suits?
No.
Uh-oh. Those might come into play.
Yeah, well, we'll find out.
All right, here we go. So what position are we in? Are we on the button? Or are we...
No.
It's not going to matter. We just have
to... But a middle position player opens, so we're somewhere between...
Well, I mean, we could be in the blinds. I don't know.
Yeah. No, we are not in the blinds.
Okay. So we're going to have position on this hand, is what you're saying?
Probably.
All right. All right. Here we go. We got queen. We're chip leader. And someone in the middle position raised to 120.
Yes.
So what do we do? You're asking me?
That's what I'm asking you.
You're asking
I'm
me?
I'm just reading the hand. That's all I do.
I pop it. Probably make it 360, 400 to go.
All right. And you're trying to get isolated heads up. You don't want any more than this one player.
Absolutely.
Or you'd like to take it down even, too, right?
I'd love to take it down. But I would, if anything, I want to get isolated with this guy and see what he does. If he re-raises me, then I might be able to get away from my queens. Probably not, though, because it's a church charity tournament. So,
that's true.
But no, I'm definitely raising. I'm not smooth calling. That's a recipe for disaster. So
again, only if you can't get away from the hand. But I agree with you here. I'm raising here.
You have to raise.
But you could call and see whether a couple of people come in, and you know, if ace or king, then you can lay it down.
Yeah, but you're just letting too many hands get in for a cheaper price. So I'm raising about 360 or 380, something like that.
Okay. Our hero re-raises to 360.
Nice.
Yeah, see, I don't like when these people start tracking you. It just encourages you. all right, so he's trying to weed out any weak aces in the blinds. The small blind pauses for a few moments before calling.
Mm.
I don't like the small blind calling ever.
Yeah, small blind. But it's a church charity tournament.
It's the worst position, and you got to wonder what they got that's worth calling.
Small blind calls. Okay.
It's a raise and a re-raise, and the small blind's just calling.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. Sounds to me like the small blind has an ace, you know.
Just an ace?
Yeah, or a small pair.
Yeah, suited ace, at least.
I'm just saying that that's why the delay. Because, like, if I have a small pair, I can maybe double through if I flop a set.
Yeah, it's not a small
or
pair.
Or it's an ace, you know, like a suited ace. Like an ace nine or something.
Hmm. All right.
But anyway, so I don't like that. It's hard to put him on a hand because I don't know. It's a church charity tournament. But, okay, so what is the original
This could be Daniel Negreanu's church. I mean, it doesn't have to be a weak players here. This could
right.
be like the toughest players that are on God's side here. So
that's true. The Church of Canadian Lexus owners.
All right, so he calls the original raiser folds.
Well, at least we're heads up still.
Yep.
Gotta like that.
All right, so the small blind has 1,800 left. And our hero says his only read on him is that he's shown down two solid hands for wins and won another one or two preflop.
Okay.
And we do not know how much you put in the collection plate. All right, the pot's 880. We go to the flop. 8-6-3 rainbow. So as of yet, the fact that we do not know suits of our queens, does that matter?
Does not matter, and it's a really nice flop for us, unless I was correct with my summation earlier, and he has a small pair and could have flopped a set.
Yeah.
But since we have position, it's going to be good. So he's probably going to check to us, and then we're going to put out a bet, and then he's going to raise, and we're going to call, and he's going to have a set, and we're going to lose. So anyway, what happens? I'm sure he checks.
All right, he does not say that the small blind checked, but he does say that the small blind called his bet of 440, so I'm assuming it was a check. And then we fired out a bet of 440.
Yeah, half the pot.
Half the pot.
I like that bet, and I got no reason to believe I'm behind here.
You know, at this point, the only cards that we could be behind to, I believe, are 8-8, maybe 6-6. I don't think a 3-3 would have called. And I'm not even sure 8-8 or 6-6 would have called here. I still was sticking to my suited ace, in which case any bet here should have chased him out because it's a rainbow flop.
All right, well, now what did the call tell you? That's what you have to
exactly.
try to figure out. If you called a raise and a re-raise cold out of position, and then just calls your bet, what does that tell you? That's pretty scary. There, a call there. There's no draw that this guy has. He doesn't have 7-9. He doesn't have 4-5.
He could have suited 7-9.
I don't think so. I'm just saying.
Exactly. You're right. I think the call
is
a walking the dog kind of call. Now, I suppose also his tentativeness, both preflop and checking and calling on the flop could mean a pocket pair in between the range that hurts us.
Like sevens?
Nines, tens, and jacks.
Yeah, nines or jacks. Yeah. Right? Well, that could be. But I still think that someone needs to get information here. You would think that this small blind now would do something if he has an overpair to the eight and wants to know where he stands. Because if the other guy has ace-king, you know, he's not going to want to give him a card at his price. He's going to want to pop it. So this is a really scary hand right now. I still think I'm ahead, but
okay.
But I like the bet that he made because you have to make that kind of bet. But the
absolutely.
But the call scares me now. So let's see what happens on the turn.
Absolutely. All right. So he's going to the turn cautiously.
Yeah, that's smart.
The pot's 1760. The turn is now the eight of spades.
Well, that helps.
Two spades on the board.
We don't think that he's got.
And the board is paired.
We don't think he's got quads, and I don't think he's got pocket sixes in his hand. So it's either an overpair or nothing. You know what I mean? He's an overpair, or he's got like you said, an ace rag or something. So I like that eight for us. He checks to us.
Yes.
I think that the pot is big enough where, you know, I'm gonna bet like a third of the pot now. I don't need to go crazy and shove, you know. And then if he shoves, then I'll see if I have to call.
All right, so before we go on, let's talk about one other possible scenario now, because of the church tournament, we talked about how maybe the play is a little unoptimal. If we go back to my whole suited ace theory, and I kind of like this hand because I haven't read it either.
Oh, okay.
So we're both going in this blind.
Yeah.
A suited ace. I mean, what if he had, like, the opponent had, like, something like ace 3, ace 6, ace 8.
Right.
Now he's got a pair. Well, one of his suits out there.
It would have to be ace 8 for him to continue. Ace 6, a pair of sixes, with the raise and re-raise, he has to know sixes aren't good here.
I don't know. Depending on how the play goes down.
Maybe ace 8. Maybe. But I can't put him on ace 6 or ace 3. So maybe ace 8. Because if it's just because it's a suited ace, you know, when he hits that pair and gets checks and gets bet into like that again.
Standard continuation bet, though.
And so you're just calling with middle pair?
I'm not defending the play. I'm trying to figure out what my opponent has.
I don't think it's a standard continuation bet when you had a raise and then a re-raise. You represented more than just ace-king.
That's true.
So it's not standard re-raise to me, a standard continuation bet to me. It's just saying, look, I told you I had a hand. I still have a hand. If you're sticking around with ace-six, I'm going to get all your chips. But maybe ace-eight. Maybe a suited ace-eight. That's the only thing that would make sense. Because of the pause and everything, but really, it still feels like jacks or something.
All right. Let's just put more stuff out there. We'll see.
Okay.
All right. So, small blind checks again.
Right.
Now our hero says he's somewhat confident, but the possibility of him sitting on a set looms, which is now a boat at this point. And he says it's usually illogical to give a free card, but I check behind, hoping to control the size of the pot.
That's what I was saying before. At first, I was saying the pot's big enough that I'll be happy to check behind and then make a decision on the river. But either check behind or bet like a third there. You know, you got a value bet too. If you believe you're ahead, you got to get some more money out of this guy, especially if he does have jacks. So I don't know. I don't mind the check there, but I think I might bet a third of the pot. So.
Yeah, and it depends on how the river comes by too. I mean, that check could be proved tricky, and you could use that to your advantage as long as it's not a scare card on the end.
Yeah, I don't mind the check there. It also makes it sound like it also makes me seem weak, and he might try to steal it on the end of the bluff. So. Maybe get some more money out of him that way. Because a check there makes it look like I do have ace-king or something like that. That's just me. I could be wrong.
No.
I'm a terrible player. I go all in with
ace-jack. And I'm running bad, so who the hell are we? All right, so the pot remains at 1760 for the river, which is a six of spades.
Again, that's scary because if he had a pair and stuck around, now he's got a boat and we don't. So that's pretty scary.
Well, he has the boat or quads now.
Well, thankfully.
He's got two different quads.
Thankfully, we have... he doesn't have quads, Scott. Thankfully, we have position. So,
all right. So he says the flush has gotten there, but what unpaired hand is he calling a re-raise pre-flop? Ace King suited. Why would he then call the flop bet? While this is going through my mind, he bets 1,000, leaving him only 360 left.
Wait. So the guy bet 1,000, or
yes.
We did? The guy bet 1,000.
Small blind with this spade on the river and the second pair on the board.
Well, the spade on the river. I mean, that's just crazy that you're betting your flush that strongly. With two pair on the board?
Two pair on the board makes it less likely that somebody's got.
Yeah. I mean, the way the hand played down, it looks like he's either got a piece of it or an overpair. So it still feels like an overpair to me. It still feels like jacks or tens or something like that. It still feels like that, but I'm not sure.
All right, and he would be confident. You think this guy would be confident betting almost always his chips with that kind of hand, with this kind of scary board, into this razor?
Well, I don't know that because I don't know what he has. When I do know what he has, I'll let you know. Anybody who calls a raise and a re-raise cold out of position in a small blind and then just check calls the whole way.
And then comes alive on the river.
And then comes alive on the river is not a very good player. I don't know. Maybe he does. I don't know. I'm going to stick with something like that, like a pair of just under our queens, but not a boat.
All right, so you're not scared by the $1,000 bet here.
At this point,
the
how could I
bowl? Of course, it's $2,760 in the pot, and you're
3-1 on my money, and I got an overpair to the board.
Exactly.
And he hasn't shown any aggression at all till the end. Maybe he's just representing. I don't know. It's pretty scary, but I think I make the call.
This is why we play poker, for these kind of situations.
I think
this is why we take a week or two off of poker.
Yeah. Yeah. This is why we, I'm gonna make the call and see what happens.
You're going to make the call. All right. So our hero says he's not sure this feels like a value bet, but if he's stealing, why not push all in with full force? Well, he's saving bus fare. You know, stick around the church a little longer.
Take money out of the collection plate.
Our hero is still only worried about 6-6 or 8-8. He thinks he would raise min preflop with ace-ace, king-king. Now he's coming around to thinking maybe jack-jack and take advantage of the scary board.
That's what I was
kind of what we're talking about. So, Chris, he goes with his gut and calls.
And were we wrong?
And our opponent shows 10-10.
Yes! 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 That's awesome. That is awesome. I was thinking that. I was thinking that's why he was so cautious about it. It makes sense now. And he's a terrible player. No, actually, I think he had the right idea at the end to represent something that wasn't there.
You know, if you think about that, I mean, how bad of a player he was. But on the river, I mean, there's so much trouble out there.
You should be happy to take it down.
You
got to
think your opponent was confused as anything, which he was.
Yeah.
And if you make that bet, I almost think he probably bet too much there.
Yeah,
which sounds
17,
odd. I mean, I guess you get into that whole post-oak bluff kind of thing. But, a 1,000 with 360 left behind. I don't know what you would have bet to get him off, because then if you bet a little less, I mean, obviously he called 1,000 anyhow.
It's definitely fishy.
Yeah.
It was definitely fishy. He was weak the whole way and then bets out, and it just seemed like a theft to me, especially because we checked. Like I said, it gave him an opportunity at the end to bluff, which it really what can he beat but a bluff, too, you know?
Yeah, and it'd be interesting what the right bet would have been on the end there for most players. I mean, obviously 1,000 didn't get rid of our hero here, which is good news for a hero, but I think a proper bet there probably was a proper amount of bet there that would probably scare some other players off of their queen hand.
Like 800.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Half the pot instead of three quarters or whatever.
Because you start thinking it through, and then you think, because at this point, I think our hero, he was confounded in the entire hand.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden you got to bet on the river, then you got to start thinking, hey, I think this is what I was scared of, and get out.
Now, if he had taken the Chris Cosenza approach and just shoved after the flop, he probably would have got all this guy's money.
Yeah.
This guy clearly was someone who wasn't going anywhere with his tens.
Yeah.
And he would have got all his money. Because you knew you were ahead, probably. Because when you're seeing multiple opponents like that, this guy had, like, jacks or tens, you know, you'd think that he would have re-raised. When he didn't, you know, I just don't see him smooth calling with aces or kings and letting another guy in to that pot. So, yeah, I knew we were ahead. The whole way. I knew, though. I was confident the whole way.
All right, well, it's interesting now that we know that he has tens, and we will take a very quick spin back through the hand real quickly, because our good friend Mitchell, with his 101 tournament moves, analyzed his hand for us, too.
Cool.
So we'll take a quick look at what he thinks. He said he would certainly not play it the same way. You get called by the initial raiser. What range of hands do you put your opponent on when he raises pre-flop and just calls? My guess would have been pocket eights, nines, tens, jacks, and ace-queen. If he had aces, kings, or ace-king, he would have moved all in.
Yep, that's what we said, that he would have re-raised again because he didn't want to. One, he knew he probably had the best hand there, and he figures that the raise and a re-raise, one of those guys is going to call him, and he's going to get his hand in good, so obviously he didn't have those two hands.
He says a loose player might have included king, queen, and maybe pocket sixes in the range. Before the flop, there's 880 in the pot. You have about 2,500. Your opponent has 1,800. The flop is 863 rainbow. It's a great flop for your hand. You bet 440. It's actually a good bet.
Yep.
As if he has an overpair, he might push. The main hand to worry about here is pocket eights.
Yep.
If he does pocket eights, you're going to get all your chips, no matter how you play this hand.
Yep.
All right. Smart guy. He should write a book.
Yeah.
Or even two.
Yeah.
the pot is 2680. The turn is an eight of spades. This is the best card you could have seen, he says.
It's less likely he has the eight.
Why? No way he has quads.
Yep.
You only have 2,000. Now, wait a minute. What? quads do happen.
Right, Scott, but we're talking about, this is a brick-and-mortar church thing, and we're talking about percentage-wise, odds-wise, if he has quads, more power to him, as Mike Sexton would say.
Well, exactly. All right. But
so that's what he's saying. There's no way he's got quads here.
All right, but what I'm saying, though, is if we're fearful of pocket eights on the flop, we can't just immediately dismiss the fact that he's got quads in the river, because quads do happen. It's less likely, yes, I know, but we should not just...
Right, but that's what he's saying, though, is that likelihood. You're talking about percentages.
No way. That's what he's saying. Yeah,
there's no way. There's no way he's got quads.
Okay, all right.
I agree with him. There's no way.
He says, you only have 2,060, so the only play on the turn is to move all in. You want to be the aggressor, get your opponent to make a decision for all of his chips on the turn. Checking is the worst play, in my humble opinion, he says.
You could shove there, but you're only going to get called by a better hand. That's the thing that scares me there. You know, what if he does have the 8? What if he has ace 8? You know, of course, we went on his range of hands, but he could have had 6-6, and he could have had quads that were no way possible, but he could have had aces and kings. You just don't know. It's a church charity event. You're only going to get called by a better hand there. I don't mind the check so much. I've seen it. I've watched tournaments. I've seen them online. I've seen them on TV. I've seen people check in that spot with the same kind of situation. Even with aces, I've seen them check with there. So...
All right, well, Mitchell says, even if you had 4,000 and your opponent had 4,000, the correct play is to move all in. You want to put the pressure on your opponent? If he had hit a set on a flop, your game is over anyway. Now, he says, checking on the turn not only lets your opponent catch up to beat you for free, but if a scare card hits on the river and your opponent bets, you're putting yourself in a tough decision.
Yeah.
Which I think is what we saw play out here.
Right? Yeah.
Secondly, he says, I don't think there's a move in his book, he says, for this particular hand, but he gives a couple pages, talked about page 207, where you plan your hand when you enter pot, and on page 31, how do you put fear in your opponent?
And we were right on there. We were all the way up till the turn. We were right there with Mitch right until the turn.
I might have been with Mitch all along. So.
No, me. You don't count because you don't do the hand. You just read it.
But I didn't read this hand beforehand. I took a big chance here.
That's true, yeah.
All right, so once again,
nice job.
Jeremy, we'll send you out a nice copy of Mitchell's book, Tournament Poker, 101 Winning Moves, Expert Play for No Limit Tournaments. Again, it's by Mitchell Kogert, and you can find it on Amazon.com and wherever else you like to buy books.
Nice job. All right, Scott, I hope you're losing ways turn around, except for in the home game.
Yeah, appreciate that. certainly I'm doing better in apes than some people, so I got that to hang my head on.
Yeah.
And the next apes event, October 23rd.
That's true.
Limit Omaha 8, one of my better games. Yeah, so we'll see if I can break through by that time.
One of my least favorite games. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table. Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.